78, maybe. This is your host, Tom Sweezy, and I am joined by the two men that you see with me. Jason, how are you? Jason Bevang.
I'm good. That little new, our new little song there puts me in a nice mood to just talk about soccer. Definitely doesn't put me in the mood to pass out at all.
It's also my attempt at, you know, giving me 30 seconds to, again, tweet out the live link. Not doing that.
You got to have it saved in your drafts.
You know, that's probably the smarter play. But also with me as I delay to tweet that out, Vaughn Pullman. Vaughn, how are you?
I'm doing good. I can't wait to use that countdown for New Year's. That's going to be the New Year's countdown.
Yeah, we're going live. You're like,
yeah. We're going live.
Guys, I got the music for 30 seconds. It has to be 30 seconds before.
This is going to be a relatively short recording that we're going to have on here with the three of us. Most, if you guys are listening via podcast, then you're not even going to notice anything. It's going to be straight into an interview that I had with Taylor Rockwell of the Total Soccer Show. Pretty much at that point, I interviewed him earlier on in the week. We talked about the U.S. Olympic qualifiers against the Costa Rica and Dominican Republic. That was before the Mexico game and before a little behind the scenes before today's game against Jamaica as well. So Taylor and I talked a little bit about that. We talked a little bit about some players that, you know, were interesting to us and everything like that. And we also talked about life for a good 10, 15 minutes of it. So hope you guys enjoy that after the three of us talk a little bit about some Major League Soccer moves, a little bit about the USA-Mexico game, and then as well USA-Jamaica. So let's dive on into it, guys. Let's talk international games first. We'll do international, MLS, international. That's how we'll break down this episode. So Vaughn, you and I last night got to experience the wonders of my space on Twitter, or the live space, the our space. I don't really know what it's called, but Twitter granted me this thing that's pretty much Clubhouse on Twitter. I don't know how to work it. I couldn't talk for the first 3 minutes, but it was fun. You and I talked about a lot of things, not USA Mexico, and then eventually led into, you know, the moment in where Sebastian Soto sent a back pass to the back line that got intercepted, and Yuriel Antuna put away a goal. So let's talk about that. I guess let's start with the negative. We watched it live, Vaughn. How did you react? How did you feel when you saw that very bad pass?
I mean, you know, as far as the game being, you know, it meaningless, really. I was kind of watching it passively, to be honest. I mean, I don't know if that was just because we were chatting through the whole thing and talking about stuff other than the game. But yeah, the game didn't quite have the energy that I was hoping for. And I think maybe that's what we saw on the Soto back pass. Like, it just seemed like in a high pressure game, you're not going to see that same pass happening. It just felt like a mental lapse where the U.S. was going kind of half speed. I never felt that they had the same kind of energy that Mexico was bringing, especially against the press. So in terms of what I saw from the game, not a lot.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Other than, I guess, you know, our defense has been good through the three games, right? Like, that's maybe the silver lining is outside of that bad back pass, we're not giving things away to the other teams. And when there have been opportunities, like in that first game against Costa Rica, where I think David Ochoa faced, what was it, like 9-10 shots?
Yeah, he had 9 saves.
Most of them were low opportunity chances. So, you know, all in all, U.S., they've done what they needed to do. They've qualified for the semifinals. They're one step closer to qualifying for the Olympics. And like we said, when we talked about, you know, when the lineup, the rosters came out, I still think that they're good enough. We've seen enough from this team through a whole bunch of different people, right? Like, different people have stepped up in different ways throughout these three games. I think that they have guys that can get them to the ultimate goal of qualifying for the Olympics.
I mean, that's a perfect point to kind of repeat and make sure that everyone listening and watching understands that the Mexico game at the end of the day did not matter. We were going to face Canada or Honduras anyway. It was the two teams we are going to end up playing. Both teams relatively weak compared to Mexico, compared to us, and also compared to Costa Rica as well. I think Costa Rica probably could have had a fair shot at doing something special in that group. But let's kind of steer towards, I guess, the overall opinion and feelings of the game as well. Jason, you watched. How did you feel? I know that that back pass was definitely something you wanted to bring up right away.
I mean, yeah, the back pass was obviously not good. I mean, it led to the one and only goal for Mexico. Yeah. I really like what I'm seeing from Mauricio Pineda. I had to give him a shout out.
You just want to get a fire. First of all, you just want to get a fire take in there. Pineda, he had half of a good game in two games.
Either way, he had like a nice tackle. Yeah, maybe I just wanted to say his name and get you talking about the fire. But yeah, I mean, overall, like you said, it was kind of meaningless besides the fact that like you always should want to beat your rival, which is Mexico here. But I felt like there just wasn't a lot of creativity going forward, I guess, for like at least the first half mainly. It just seems like we're, like you said, the defense has been pretty good, but sometimes it feels like there's just some disjointing and like lack of, creativity in a sense. Because I just want, like, when they go forward, I want to see more of, like, an actual goal where, like, obviously they're trying to score, but, like, something that they're thinking about, like, at all times, knowing where the other players are. And that'll probably come with time. Like, of course, these guys are young. Some probably haven't played together before, I assume. Maybe a couple. But I think that'll just come with time. And they need a couple games. Like, obviously this is the third game. To just kind of mesh a little bit more.
No, I think that coming off of, you know, these guys, a lot of the Costa Rican players, a lot of the Canadian players, they're coming off non-active games where Mexico, a lot of these guys are playing actively in Liga MX right now, right? You know, they're coming off of an off season, and that's a big thing that I think is going to continue to impact the U.S. Obviously, we have potentially two games left, hopefully two games left, because that means, you know, we're going to the Olympics at that point. But it's just interesting, and I will give credit to this group that did very well overall throughout these first three games, and especially last night against Mexico, a group that didn't have arguably four of the best players within this team right now, with Jackson Yule not starting, Justin Glad not starting, Jesus Ferreira not starting, and Sam Vines not starting as well. You know, outside of Ferreira, I'd say that Yule, Vines, and Glad were arguably our three best players against the Dominican Republic and Costa Rica. And, you know, Taylor Rockwell and I talked about that a little bit, so I'm not going to dive too much deep into that. So I kind of wanted to get your guys' opinions real quick. Jason, who's really impressed you so far throughout these first three games? And I guess kind of who's maybe, for lack of better words, shit the bed a little bit?
I mean, ever since I've seen Sam Vines play – like I love it. Yeah. With the U.S. like he seems to fit in so perfectly, and he really just knows what he's doing. I mean, obviously you just mentioned him and like you guys talked about him already, but overall I'm just really excited about him. Like I see like very long term, like one of our, I mean, he could become, like, obviously that position's like a little bit weaker. That's a super important role to fill, and if he can do that, whether he's, you know, starting or challenging to start or coming off the bench in the senior team, like no matter what, that's a plus. So,
I mean, I'm a big Sam Vines fan. You'll find out later on this episode who else is also a big fan of Sam Vines, but Vaughn, I'll turn to you now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I knew Sam Vines. You know,
for a while.
Yeah. I've known him for a little while, seen him a little bit closer with the Charlotte Independents. But it, you know, in terms of who's impressed me through these three games, I don't think we've mentioned Hassani Dotson. He wasn't fantastic against Mexico, but we know his impact that he had on the field in the games against Costa Rica and the Dominican Republic. He's impressed me. David Ochoa has come in and definitely kind of taken that leadership role, had the fantastic game against Costa Rica, and even in the game against Mexico, right? Like at the end of the game, everyone's talking about David Ochoa and how he's stepping up to the player, bringing some of that fire and energy. So those are two guys that have stood out to me, guys that maybe I've been disappointed by. I think I expected more from Cardoso with his time that he's had in the midfield. And also Bofa Saucedo. I think one of the challenges that we saw was I think Saucedo was trying to be that main guy in the attack, right? Like he was trying to step up and be the guy where the ball comes to his feet and he tries to make something happen. And I think more often than not, he was getting stonewalled consistently. Yeah. He wasn't winning those one-on-one duels when he had the ball at his feet. And I think he was starting to grow frustrated with not getting those things connecting. So I'd say those are the two guys that maybe on another day or another window, we would be seeing more production out of. And I think they've just kind of missed it a little bit here through these three games.
The Sebastian Saucedo take is definitely a good one. And I don't remember who I initially heard say it, but I really can understand it and agree with it that in the game against Mexico, I feel like Sebastian Saucedo had almost like, I deserve to be on this field with these players type moments. He's the only one that for the U.S. is playing in Liga MX right now. Like, he's a guy who was sitting on the bench for Pumas, got a few minutes here and there, maybe a guy that kind of wanted to go out there and be a little flashy and show that I can play with everyone else on this field. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to say he looked awful, but he just didn't do and step up kind of what we needed him to do in that game. And it showed, you know, he had, I remember one pass across the box that was just absolutely, I don't even know what he was trying to do with that ball. It was bad. But a few players like that, I think, definitely underwhelmed us a bit. Jason, I apologize. I cut you off.
I was a fan of Ochoa knocking that guy down.
Yes. Ochoa, I think, Pavon, did I say this to you last
time? I love
Ochoa,
that energy.
Ochoa reminds me of, like, a very young Tim Howard. Just like willing to talk, willing to get in someone's face. Just like, I love it.
He's got like a little fire and just exciting to see where that's going to take him.
Yeah. Were you trying to go with a fire?
Oh, I actually wasn't. Nah, not there.
Got it. I think David Ochoa, I also saw him in USL Championship. Like, he made like a PK save and he like licked the soccer ball. Like, he's out of his mind a little bit, and I like it. I'm a fan of the kid.
Man, I just had like a terrible thought that I can no longer make the terrible impact puns with Montreal Impact.
Oh. R.I.P.
Like,
you know,
it was the easiest thing. Like, we can talk about a dumpster fire in Chicago, but
oh, that's just pain. Why you gotta do me like that?
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, it's kind of like a throwback to what did the owner of the Impact say? He had to make an impact by retiring the Impact. You know,
like that was their official statement.
Absolutely awful. Absolutely awful.
That was like, I read that. I was like, oh god, what if we come to?
Let's transition over to, I guess, the full senior men's team, even though technically I think the Olympics is technically a senior team level. I don't really know how it all works in my brain, but whatever. USA Jamaica happened today as of recording, as of you watching this live. If you're watching in the past, then it wasn't today. But USA Jamaica was a slow one, was an interesting one for at least 45 minutes. Then I think things picked up a little bit. Obviously, I think we could start the conversation with Sergiño Dest being the best player on the field overall, in my opinion. Obviously, hitting that opening goal, that was an absolute screamer from outside the box. I love that our left back, right back, wherever you want to play him, that plays for Barcelona, that's just feeding Messi, right? He gets fed by Messi. He's putting balls away on La Liga as well. Just drove down the left side of the field, cut in outside the box, was like, I'm just going to take this one. And just, like, absolutely love it. Jason, I'll go to you first. Sergiño Dest just I want 11 of them. I don't know how you feel, but that's kind of that's where I'm at with Serginho.
I mean, like you said, he had a phenomenal game. He scored an amazing goal. He's just become, like, you can tell he's just full of confidence at the moment. Yeah. It's kind of surreal that, like, we're able to be like, yeah, he's, you know, feeding Messi, being fed by Messi. Like, that's kind of crazy to think about that. Like, 5 years ago, I would have never thought that was possible. But, I mean, he's just, like, he's so good and confident. And, like, that mixture is just, like, a recipe for disaster for other teams. Like, he's just going to keep getting better from what I've seen. And he's in a great scenario to do that in Barcelona. And just, like, seeing how Messi trains and stuff. And he just seems like a fun dude also. I don't know if you guys saw that interview. I think it was with Sebastian Soto. Who was it? With one of the players who was talking about the camp with Serginho Dest. And he was like, yeah, Dest just, like, grabs a baguette before each game. Just, like, a full baguette and just eats the baguette. Like,
oh, yes, I saw that. He just eats it plain. Nothing on it.
He just eats a baguette. And, like, that is some insane, like, that's insanity that we need.
Dude, yeah, I'm saying, do we want that type of crazy on the US?
Oh, no, we do. Yeah, crazy is good. If it's that talented, yeah, eat as many baguettes as you want, Dest.
We're getting the crazy US men's national team together. David Ochoa licking soccer balls. Serginho Dest eating just dry baguettes. Vaughn, I guess, any Dest takes that you want to go out there? Any other crazy U.S. men's national team players?
Hey, you got a carb load, you know? Like, it's not a problem.
This is, like, right before the game, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that's what he's doing, but no big takes for Dest. I mean, I saw the goal. I will say, it is a travesty that this game was at 1 o'clock on a Thursday here on the East Coast.
I had to, like, listen to half of it in the car. I was driving around to a meeting.
Like, where was the game actually played?
It was played in Belgium or Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I'll give the pass there. But, yeah, that was disappointing because I didn't actually get to watch the game. Yes. But I obviously saw the highlights. And yeah, Dest's goal was pretty phenomenal. I was actually probably more excited to see the Sargent Aaronson goal. I think seeing Sargent carry some of his recent good form into U.S. men's national team camp is huge. I think that is going to help our forward depth chart so much if he can be something like he, you know, has been hyped up to be.
Exactly.
So I think seeing that and the maturation of Aaronson, I'm really excited to see if he can be that pivotal piece in the midfield as well, because that adds a whole nother layer to what we can do. I disappointed I didn't get to watch it, but from the highlights, those were two really good things that I saw.
That's a great point. Is Brendan Aaronson. Yes, Josh Sargent. I completely agree with you with Josh Sargent, but my mind immediately went to Brendan Aaronson. Brendan Aaronson was a very good player, and I think U.S. men's national team quality with last season with the Philadelphia Union, and arguably the best player on the Philadelphia Union last year. But what he's done, and even, like, this is, like, really, I'm going to say people don't have the Austrian Bundesliga available to watch every single week at home here in the States. So really getting to watch him today was a big moment, and kind of seeing how he's developed since joining Salzburg under Jesse Marsch. And he looked like him, like, elevated to a whole nother level. And it's fantastic that we can have someone like him playing, starting in the midfield, right? Potentially starting in the midfield. Also maybe on the wing, which he was doing a little bit of, and I wasn't hating whatsoever. So kind of wherever Brendan Aaronson can find his nest, find his home, I'm excited for it, because the dude's crazy athletic. The dude's crazy with his ability to pass, his ability to kind of dribble out of danger, make something out of nothing. And I'm here for Brendan Aaronson, absolutely just killing it. Also, shout out Sebastian Legette, continuing to just put all of the MLS haters to rest with another brace today. Sebastian Legette has never had a poor game for the U.S. men's national team, and that should continue with him in a starting role until he has a bad game. That's just a fact in my brain. But Any other takes about this USA Jamaica game? Obviously, 4-1. The one goal against us was just on a break. Wasn't a lot of great pressure. Wasn't a lot of great defensive work on the break, but it is what it is there. Do you guys have any other takes you want to go for?
Yeah. The only other thing is I can't tell you how happy it is to see Kellen Acosta out there, because I absolutely love him and I've always wanted to see him do well.
Friend
of the pod. And I was just so excited to see him out there. And it sounds like he did pretty well.
Yeah, for having to step up and play an emergency number six with no Tyler Adams there, I'll take it. You know, at this point, the number six depth chart, we talked about Johnny a little bit before not being too great. It's not too deep. It's Tyler Adams. It's Jackson Ewell. Kellen Acosta wants to come up with a ton of CONCACAF experience because he does have a ton of CONCACAF experience. He scored in the Azteca against Mexico. I interviewed him the few weeks after that goal or a week after that goal. So go back and listen to that from like 3 years ago, but still very cool dude, very good player. I'm excited to have him back in U.S. Men's National Team camp. It wasn't all positives today. I don't want to dive super deep into it, but Reggie Cannon, we need you to step that performance up. Christian Pulisic, we need you to step that performance up. I want a quick take, or I guess a quick opinion from you guys on this. After the game, in that kind of Twitter conversation clubhouse thing, Matt Doyle and David Goss from Extra Time, they were chatting a bit after the game. They were talking about, you know, I'm going to synthesize it as quick as I can, that Christian Pulisic is almost like part of that old U.S. men's national team that failed to qualify for the Olympics. Like, that was the team that he came up with, team broke out with, right? Like the Jermaine Joneses, Michael Bradleys, Josies of the world, whatever. His last game was over a year ago when we got embarrassed by Canada. And he's never really had, due to injury, due to being at Chelsea, due to whatever, he's never really had a full camp or a full tournament or full set of games to really adapt and play international soccer with Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, Serginho Dest, John Brooks, maybe Brooks because whatever, but you get what I'm saying. Does Pulisic need time to adapt to this U.S. men's national team that at the end of the day isn't all about this up-and-coming 18-year-old kid playing at Borussia Dortmund? Or is he kind of maybe potentially not the same Christian Pulisic we expected him to be? I don't know. There's a very interesting thought process here. Vaughn, I see you nodding a bit. I'll go to you first.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually going to comment before you even brought up Pulisic that I saw somebody, I don't remember who it was, after the game talking about on Twitter, you know, there was a point in time where if Pulisic wasn't on the field or if he had a bad game, that was going to make or break this national team.
Yeah.
I think that it is amazing how quickly the pool has gotten stronger where we're not Pulisic dependent.
Pulisic only.
Pulisic only, yeah. I think, and even now, right, like there's guys like McKennie that aren't out there and we're able to bring in a guy like Yunus Musa that we were talking about and he's able to step right in and be a key contributor. Like we're winning some of these dual national signings in getting them to join the team. I think we have a true identity. I think that was one of the biggest frustrations post Klinsmann. Like once you went into Arena and then into Dave Sarakan, like there wasn't an identity. Like it felt like we were like fighting for a style. I feel like under Berhalter, it is clear what we're trying to do.
Yes.
Right. And I think the players are thriving with that clarity. And I think in general, we have a really good crop of people coming up through the national team ranks. So that's what I would say is, you know, we don't have to rely on Pulisic, but we saw at the beginning of the year what he was doing for Chelsea when he was starting, right? Like his ceiling is still the highest ceiling, I think, of anyone in the pool today. Like he has the ability to be that game changer on the global level. And I think if he finds the right system, if he finds the right coach, if he finds the right opportunities, he's going to get to that point. You know, where he's bridging the gap between the U.S. men's national team of old and this new age of the U.S. men's national team. You know, we're lacking that Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey, even like a Tim Howard, Michael Bradley. Like, those were the guys that game in and game out, you knew that they were going to be in the roster for, what, 12 years? Like,
yeah, no.
And they were the guys. Like, it was going to go through them, and the success was going to be them scoring goals on the biggest stage. Right now, it feels much more like by committee, and I feel like that is a good thing for the U.S. men's national team because it's by committee, but I think there's a lot of belief and trust in that committee.
Yes. That was a lot there. Jason, I'm going to let you go, and then I'm gonna condense thoughts.
Okay. So I actually have two things, kind of an answer to both of those like questions. So I think just from a pool six, like actual on-field play, I think like just the caliber of player has gotten better. Like, so the entire team has risen up, I'd say at least like a notch or whatever, imaginary notch. Yeah. But that would make like, if Pulisic was here and the rest of the team is here, it's pretty obvious when Pulisic is doing well, very clear, like, wow, this kid is awesome. He's young. He's, you know, the best player on the team. Like Vaughn said, you know, the U.S. went if he was good. So like as that bar kind of narrowed now, like if Pulisic is playing at his peak and everyone else is, like, it's pretty close. Like Vaughn said, like, he's got a massive ceiling. Like, this, he's still what, 22?
He's turning 23 soon.
Yeah. Like, he's so young. He's 3 years younger than me. So like, it's really not a, like, he's very young. There's a lot he can grow in. And I also think like the atmosphere in the locker room type of thing is so different. Just from like someone who has no idea what's going on, like behind closed doors, like what we get from this team, like the stories and it seems like the Instagram and like all of their accounts that are, they're pretty lively, especially when they're all together and they're supporting each other on different posts. It's just drastically different. And Pulisic has been in some camps, like mainly a little bit injured or not for like the full thing, like you said. But I feel like this would be almost a shock from where we were to where we are now with just like the absolute, like the player atmosphere. And they seem like pretty close friends. And Pulisic is definitely in that, like he probably texts these guys a lot. But like when you actually get into the camp, when you're like with these guys in the same hotels, you know, every day, I think it could be of like, like this is the new U.S. men's national team.
It just almost feels like, and this kind of like your talk there, Jason, kind of led me to this, that he came up and grew up with the U.S. men's national team where he almost couldn't trust the guys around him to get the job done because they weren't on the same caliber that he was. And that's no shot at any of those old players, right? But a 30-whatever-year-old Clint Dempsey, a 30-whatever-year-old Donovan, Jones, Cameron, you know, late 20s Josie, is not the same thing we see today of Sergiño Dest, of Giovanni Reina, of Brendan Aaronson, of Yunus Musah, Weston McKennie. They're just not the same caliber players. You're looking at a peak of those players being, what, Fulham, to a peak of, you know,
Barcelona,
Juventus, Barcelona, you know, Chelsea. It almost feels like to me that Pulisic is still the best player on this roster, is still the most talented player on this roster, and Vaughn, like you said, still has the highest peak on this roster. I just feel like he needs to play in a major tournament with one of these guys because he's never played in a major tournament for the U.S. men's national team. He's never scored a goal against any type of competitive opponent for the U.S. men's national team. And that's the one thing that worries me about Christian Pulisic is the experience and the exposure he's had at the U.S. men's national team level just hasn't been there. And he's been within our team for, what, 5 years now?
But I think that's the big thing, right? Like, you look at this roster – And I don't know so much, like, we know that the goal for 22 is like, let's not fail to qualify again. Like, let's actually get in. And I think we are good enough to do that. I sure hope so. But yeah. The big thing is that we're talking about these guys that are 22, 23, like they are going to be hitting prime for the 26 World Cup, right? Like the way I look at it is these guys are going to be 27, 28, that range when they hit the 26 World Cup. And right now,
and with World Cup experience with them from 22.
Right. And then the guys that right now are like U14 level, they're going to, no, but seriously, like that's going to be next round of the Pulisics and the Reinas for that next cycle. I think this is all gearing towards, everything right now is gearing towards 26.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to Bruce Arena on Extra Time, you're an idiot if you think the U.S. men's national team has any chance of winning the 2022 World Cup. So that's hopefully winning 26. All right, let's steer away from U.S. men's national team talk. Let's dive quickly into some Major League Soccer talk before we get to the interview between myself and Taylor Rockwell. Some announcements for the 2021 season. The Campeones Cup is back. The Campeón de Campeones and the Leagues Cup is back as well. Major League Soccer announcing the teams playing in both of those competitions. We'll get some opinions on the tournaments in a second, Jason. I know you have your opinions.
I don't even have much to say about it. It's like three words.
It's dumb. It's very dumb.
No. I was going to say waste of time.
But still, the Campeones Cup is back. It is going to be played in late September between the MLS champion, which is currently the Columbus Crew, versus whoever comes out as champion of Liga MX. So we get another version of that. I think right now we are split a game apiece between both leagues. So this will be the third showing of that. And then in the League's Cup, I think that the Major League Soccer and Liga MX agreed to knock it down to four teams per league instead of six that we saw the first go around. So for the League's Cup, we have NYCFC, SKC, Orlando City, and Seattle. So Vaughn, you and I have some, I guess, some ties to the League's Cup this year. I don't know how well we'll do, but we'll see. That is going to be played, and that was confirmed to be in May. So just some extra competitions going about Major League Soccer. So that leading into, I guess, a bigger point that I had, or a bigger conversation that I wanted to have for competitions in 2021. The same way that I think the U.S. men's national team is having to prioritize players and have a deep roster for many competitions in 2021 due to obviously what COVID impacted last year, Major League Soccer teams are also going to be facing this impact between whoever's playing in Campeones Cup, Leagues Cup, whatever the U.S. Open Cup those clubs are going to be. MLS regular season, all leading up into an MLS Cup playoffs, right? You also have the Supporter Shield race in the middle of that. Oh, CONCACAF Champions League. There's a lot of stuff going on in 2021. And obviously, and very smartly, MLS and Liga MX are restricting teams, only having teams play in certain competitions, all of that. So in me saying that, I wanted to ask you guys your priorities, your own personal prioritization of these competitions. If you had to rank these competitions, there is six of them within the region. Which one's most important and which one do you just not give a shit about if you had to kind of line all of them up in a season? So I'll give you guys a second. I know we talked about it a little bit, but just for the people listening, you have MLS Cup, you have the Supporter Shield, you have the US Open Cup, CONCACAF Champions League, Campeones Cup, and the Leagues Cup are the six tournaments or six potential trophies that normally you can win in a year, I guess, if you qualify for all of that in some magical way. So, Vaughn, I will go to you, I guess. What is the most important one? What is the least important one? And if you want to give me anything in between, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, most prestigious to me is the CONCACAF Champions League. Like, yes. That's the one that for MLS clubs, it's obviously most elusive. And I think it's clearly that's the highest level you can get. I guess we're not including the Club World Cup. We won't go there.
Not yet.
But yeah, I would put Champions League number one. Bottom one is probably League's Cup, right? I mean, it's just bottom rung.
That's a cash grab.
Yeah, personally, I still put MLS Cup ahead of Supporters Shield. I don't know if that's just because I'm a Sporting KC fan, and I can say that we've won some MLS Cups, and we've got one Supporters Shield. But to me, the excitement of the playoffs and that end win is a much bigger feeling to me than seeing a team lift Supporters Shield.
So I can agree with you that CONCACAF Champions League definitely tops my list, and League's Cup is bottom of mine. Sam would disagree with you. We learned that a few months ago, that Sam does not think CONCACAF Champions League is the most prestigious. Or Jason, was that you or was Sam?
That was a while ago, man. I don't remember.
Well, what's your opinion?
UCL. Well, I said UCL. CONCACAF Champions League, by far.
Okay. Okay, so then it was Sam. Sam is the one that he said CCL is not the number one trophy in the United States.
What did he say it was?
He said MLS Cup was.
Yeah.
He said because MLS teams – this was a while ago, but he said something like MLS teams don't have, like, a real shot at CCL, so how can it be the
number one trophy? Because then we brought up, the Club World Cup, and we're like – this reason.
exactly. So yeah, Jason, CCL, are you in agreement CCL is number one and League's Cup is last?
League's Cup is a waste of time. It's so dumb. It's literally the worst Campione's Cup, basically.
I like the idea of a Campione's Cup. It's not a tournament.
I don't mind that. It's one game. Let them play that. That's fine. But I mean, that would probably be my second least important.
I disagree.
U.S. Open Cup. You
Supporter put? Shield. I am not a Supporter Shield truther. I understand
this.
That.
Go ahead.
Go.
Okay.
Go
right ahead. The Supporter Shield, in my opinion, you have to play every team. So the more they add teams, the less important the Supporter Shield gets. Until there's going to be a point where, you might not even play the person that's in second in the Supporter Shield rankings. So, in my opinion, how can you give this trophy to the best regular season team that didn't play all the teams?
My guy, Jason, you're my guy. That is, I understand consistency over a 30 whatever game season. It's eventually going to grow to, right? Or whatever you have to cap it at, whatever. I just think Supporter Shield is less important than the U.S. Open Cup. It might be the biggest U.S. Open Cup stand. I might be the one running that Open Cup account. You have no idea. But I really love the U.S. Open Cup. And I think Campeones Cup is bigger. You have the best team out of Mexico. Let's play the best team in the United States. One game, win or die. Let's do it. I just love that. So that's why I have Supporter Shield so low. I think if I had to pick, I think five of these trophies actually matter. I think League's Cup does not matter. But Supporter Shield actually matters. I will say that. Yeah. But I just think it's, in my opinion, the second. Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
I want to add this, right? What I do like about these competitions, right? I remember being in lower level kids, baseball. And the teams that were the elite teams that were good, right? They're the ones that are playing 40 game seasons when I'm over here playing 15, 16 games. Yeah. So what I think is good is that the good teams in MLS are getting more competitions within the calendar year. I think I saw at one point where theoretically you could play up to 55, 60 games if you have a deep CCL run, a deep Open Cup run. You make one of these tournaments, you have a deep playoff run, you can get a lot of games packed into a year now. And I think that's the good thing in what's going to continue helping development of MLS and as a league, is when these players build up that fitness, they build up that regimen of playing year round, of having a full calendar, of having depth where you have to do roster rotation. That's the positive of having these other competitions, aside from the money factor. and also maybe playing higher competition, right? If we're still saying Liga MX is a step above MLS, you're getting some more opportunities to play that higher level. But I think more so, it's just getting more reps. It's getting more games under your belt as a club. So that's kind of the added benefit that I don't think a lot of people talk about, that I think is a positive.
I can agree with that. And we could obviously go down this rabbit hole for a while, but more games, more competitions means, you know, you're going to need more cheddar to get more depth, to have more players to play more. So there's a whole rabbit hole to go down, right? But let's finish things up between the three of us here with some Major League Soccer player announcements. There's been a lot of player signings since last time that, you know, any of us spoke on this camera, on this mic. So Jason, I know you have your list stocked up, ready to go. I'm going to let you go first. Who is a player that was announced this week that, you know, you're interested in leading into watching this season?
Yeah. So actually I'll go with a DC United pickup. They got, actually, I think it was today, Nigel Roberta. I don't know if you say the age.
You got it.
He's 23 years old, and he came from the Bulgarian first division. The team was PFC Levski Sofia, where he had 39 games, 20 goals, and 8 assists. He's joining Ola Kamara and Jordi Reyna. So already, like, this attack, I think, is going to be pretty solid. But, I mean, I haven't watched this Nigel.
You don't watch the Bulgarian first division?
No, no. Yeah, I don't have the time for that one. But he came from Feyenoord's academy in Holland. I believe that's a Holland team. Yes. But, like, so this guy, he seems legit, and 20 goals and 8 assists over 39 games is impressive. So if he can get 20 goals with DC, like, that's a great move. So, I mean, yeah, I'm really interested to see how he does and how he can help DC.
Yeah, I don't know if 20 goals in the Bulgarian first division is equal to 29 goals is equal to, so maybe 29 goals in Bulgaria is 20 goals in Major League Soccer. That's the
equivalent. No, he did have 20. I lied. Never mind.
Whatever. Still, at the end of the day, I like the move because DC needed striker help. So good choice there, Jason. Vaughn, do you have any takes on the Bulgarian first division or maybe another MLS player to talk about?
Yeah, I've got no takes on the Bulgarian first division. I don't think I've seen a minute of the league, so I can't say anything. I haven't even watched the highlight of it.
No, there's probably like an ESPN top 10 play from like 20 years ago.
I think I don't even know exactly where Bulgaria is, if I'm being completely honest.
You're up.
Yeah, Jason, thank you.
Got you. Then just like spin the country and drop your finger, and it's like, oh, is that it? Maybe
it's somewhere in there, you know.
But in terms of another signing, Kelvin Leerdam is going to be a great fit for Inter Seattle.
Inter Seattle.
I think Leerdam is at his best. He is one of the better outside backs in the league. And we didn't always see that from him last year. But between Leerdam and Jovan Jones, I started looking at what this Inter Miami team is looking like, and they actually look pretty solid. I know there's some people that aren't buying into that yet, but what I'm seeing is this team could be legitimately competitive. So I'm curious to see what Phil Neville can do with all of those pieces and all those personalities and if they can build a style. But to me, I'm looking at the roster and I'm like, they've got three really good center backs. Like, are they going to go with a 3-5-2 and have a back line of LGP, Nico Fagal, and Shawcross? Like, absolutely could happen. And then you've got the outside backs now here with guys like Leerdam and Jones. A midfield that's got Matuidi and you've got Lewis Morgan Pizarro. That could be out there, Pizarro, and you got the Higuain brothers still on the roster. Like,
are you previewing on this team? Is you just like,
I'm just saying, like,
they're so well done. I'm sold.
No, I just started like living through the roster, and aren't even talking about Kieran Gibbs that looks like he's coming in. that all of a sudden I'm looking at this roster and like, they could be pretty good, guys.
We will be doing previews soon. Inter Miami's one that I feel like we're going to have a little disagreement on that.
Was good.
Non-agreeance.
New vocabulary.
In the moves that they've made, to me, it seems like Bex is calling on all his old boys from the Premier League and Gibbs and Shawcross and all of them. He's like, come on down to you know, Florida and let's go potentially win some games. But we'll see. We'll see. I think it's going to be a lot falling on the shoulders of Higuain, how many goals he can score. Can Pizarro step it up? Can, you know, Matuidi not have Dax McCarty burning by him? And that's pretty much, I guess, where this Inter-Miami squad falls. But I do really like the Kelvin Leerdam pickup. I like the Jovan Jones pickup, and we'll see what Kieran Gibbs can bring in the summer, because that's going to be that's an interesting one to me. But cool. Okay, the last move that I want to talk about, I'm going to butcher this name, so I'm going to be reading it while I say it. Arnor Yngve Traustsen from Malmo to the Revolution. I'm so sorry to Arnor that I just butchered the shit out of that. But an Icelandic international is going to go be playing under Bruce Arena, and the Revolution have the best tack in Major League Soccer, bar none. Give it to them. They're going to score 100 million goals. Bo on one side, Traustsen on the other, heel in the middle, Busca up top. They're just going to bang in goals. Plus that midfielder that they signed, I don't remember his name off the top of my head. I apologize, Revolution fans, who played at some La Liga club at one point. I want to say Barcelona, but that's probably incorrect. The Revolution are filthy. They only upgraded, and I think I'm really liking them. I'm not trying to do a season preview over here about the Revolution either, but this move of bringing in Traustsen, coming from Malmo, very high-profile club over in Europe, right, a club that produces talent, a dude who is around the Iceland national team, and a guy who's won trophies, a guy who's scored a shit ton of goals in his career, and a guy who's also been able to produce within his assist numbers as well, coming out on the wing. I don't see where the Revolution haven't hit this offseason. So that's my pick for this week.
That's good. And the midfielder you were thinking of was, I forgot that New England replaced Wilfried Zahibo with another Wilfried. It's Wilfried Kaptum.
There we go, Kaptum. Do you know what La Liga club you played at?
No.
Okay. Well, that would have been some help. I'm going to do quick Googling, really bad podcasting. Wilfried Kaptum, Cameroonian. Yeah,
spell his name. Oh, here
it is. He played at Barcelona. There we go. Let's go. Played at Barcelona B. Never made an appearance for Barcelona. Then Real Betis. So, what's up? That's all I got about that dude. So,
wait, did he not get a single appearance?
Well, according to Wikipedia, he didn't. Transfermarkt usually gives you more detailed, like,
if yeah, Wikipedia. It says Barcelona. It's funny because it lists it 2015 to 2016, zero appearances.
Yeah, that's it. Just none. Like, so. But he came up through the Barcelona system, so watch out. Guy's going to turn it on. That's all I got between the three of us. I'm glad with some of the conversation we had, and I expected this conversation to go 20 minutes, and we're at about 48 minutes. So typical us fashion. Jason, Vaughn, do you have any final takes about Major League Soccer, about U.S. Men's National Team? Jason, I like your hoodie. About any of that before we wrap up?
I mean, no.
We've got the schedule release, so that's exciting.
True.
Is it?
I think it's exciting.
Sell me on how to get excited about a schedule, please. I saw people freaking out. I get it. I get we know the start date. We get the opening games, but like, it's still a month away. I have a time and a place and a date.
Yeah, but I can be like, hey, this might be the week that I go down to Atlanta to try to catch a game. This is when I might go up to DC and try to catch a game, right? Like, Sporting Kansas City is not coming anywhere nearby Charlotte, North Carolina, so not going to catch them this year, I don't think. But that's where I think it's exciting, right? Like, you get to map out your road trips. Well, I guess I'm talking as one person who doesn't have MLS in my market yet.
I guess for someone who's proactive and planning things, that's awesome. I am
yeah, it goes,
not.
I don't really, really pay attention to it. Like, I mean, they're going to play these couple teams. Like, it is what it is. I'll look at it when I really start going into detail.
Vaughn, you're talking to the wrong crowd. It's pretty much what you're getting at here. So, I get it for people listening. I get it. Be excited. The schedule dropped. You're just not going to get me pumped, freaking out about schedule.
Oh, I have something to add.
Yes.
Separately. Everyone should vote in our March Madness MLS Aces edition.
Yes.
I so, think you're putting those out with the games, I think, each round. I don't know. But the polls come out on Twitter.
So every single – it's pretty much been like every 3 days I've been putting out a blog of the MLS Aces March Madness edition. A good poll there, Jason. Thank you.
Hey, it was fun to do. I want people to actually see it. So
that, you know, we have some of the best moments from Major League Soccer from 1996 all the way to today that we all kind of drafted. We
ranked them. RFK Raccoons.
Jason's pulling really hard for his RFK
I'm Raccoons. I'm boosting them up, but it's, I don't know.
Those Cinderella Raccoons.
It looks like they might not have a good week this last one. I think it'll be the final result, so.
So check it out on MLSaces.com. You can always go out there and check any new blogs we have. But every about 2-3 days, I've been updating the site with a blog piece about kind of where everything sits. In that blog piece, there's a link to the live Google Doc where the live bracket is. You can always see the live bracket. You can see all the seedings, who we drafted, how we drafted them, how we ranked them, all of that such. So there's a Producing Vaunders conference, a Timbers Jason conference, an Uncle Daddy Sam conference, and a Tom Sweezy conference. I don't have a nickname, so I don't have that there, but super fun. Check it out. We've had over 2,000 votes so far, so I really appreciate everyone who's voted. That was really, really cool. Let's keep the votes going. Right now we're in the I think we're in this Elite Eight, if I'm doing that correctly. So Elite Eight voting should be out soon. I will type it up tonight and not be lazy. So thank you, Jason, for keeping me honest with that. And if you guys are still listening, thank you. This is going to be leading into a conversation that I had with Taylor Rockwell of the Total Soccer Show. We talked about the U.S. Men's National Team. We talked about U.S. Men's National Team strikers, the games against Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, all of that, who Taylor likes. And then we just talked about life, and I got to meet Taylor Rockwell, and I had a bit of a celebrity moment. So you'll definitely hear me a little freaked out, but it's fine. Just watch, enjoy. Thank you guys for listening, and peace. Sweezy, and if you guys are watching now, watching later on Twitch, YouTube, whatever it may be, you guys may recognize the beard sitting next to me here virtually, of course. That's Taylor Rockwell from the Total Soccer Show. Taylor, how are you, man? Thank you for coming on.
I'm doing well, other than like my mic etiquette is terrible as I like shake a pen right into the microphone. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but you know, I wanted to also give the listeners a little bit of insight. Congratulations on, you know, newly becoming a father. I guess, you know, how has podcasting from home and parenting from home all kind of combining been?
Yeah, it's been something. I mean, COVID was weird just to keep doing the show, but doing it from home. So like, it's still talking to people for an hour or 2 hours every day. Today I talked to Joe for 2 hours and Ryan and Graham for 2 hours. So it's like, yeah, I like, it feels like I've still seen people like for 4 hours at a time, but in reality I haven't. And then adding in a baby to that, it does feel a little bit like there's no real stoppage of time. It all just keeps going. There was in the first week I came back, I'm not complaining because my wife has had it way worse than I am. I guess I'm complaining a little bit, but she can complain more. I was definitely a bit where I was going on like 3 to 4 hours of sleep, which does not make for great like connectivity of thoughts and stringing together ideas was a little bit hard. So I think Joe and Ryan had to deal with me saying some things that I could always tell with Ryan when I've said something that doesn't quite land, when at the end of it, he's like, all right, and moving on. And it's like, oh, that was a bit rambly. And maybe this one is too. Who knows?
No, I mean, honestly, I'm sure I have no experience in that. There is a new nephew in the family, so I have a little bit of experience of watching a baby. But
first?
Yeah, first nephew in the family. I was the baby in the family up until him. So, I mean, you know,
yeah,
it's a good 25-year gap at this point. So, you know, I'm getting used to it for sure a little bit. And I couldn't imagine, you know, what you're going through running this whole thing. And then on top of that, baby.
Yeah, it's cool, though, because it definitely does. Like my brother had kids before we did. My wife's brothers both did. So I've been like an uncle several times at this point now, and it definitely is still like an amazing thing, and you get to hang out with them and you're like involved in their lives, and I really, really love it. But it's not a like de-stressor, and I will be honest, like having a baby definitely is, because like if you think something's wrong and something isn't, nothing will ever give you like better relief than that. And simultaneously, like I've definitely had some times lately of like, like, is this ever gonna end? I'm so stressed out. And then she smiles and I'm like, all right, we're good, we're fine, it's not a big deal. So it's definitely like, I think she knows when she has to be adorable to de-escalate situations, and she does it really well. So she's pretty intuitive so far. Yeah.
Well, I love that. I love that. And at the same exact time, like we said, you've been successfully hosting, running a podcast, a string of podcasts now with Underneath Total Soccer Show, right? How has the transition been? You guys are over a decade of, you know, having the Total Soccer Show as being a thing, right? And now you guys have Allocation Disorder, you have the MLS Assist, you have all this stuff falling underneath the show, and that, you know, that have come and go in the years as well. Also, you know, being under an overarching The Athletic now as well. How has this transition been to modern day, I guess, 2021, where we're sitting now?
I mean, and I appreciate your being delicate, but like Daryl has to be like part of that conversation. And, it's been strange. It's been pretty weird. Like, I talked to George about that, like maybe a month after Daryl passed, and it's still pretty, it's like a regular challenge of how to do things and how to make sure things kind of operate on the same level and in the same capacity. To take it all the way back, like, yeah, we started doing the show on public radio in 2009, the public radio here in Richmond. And then we turned it into a podcast so we could go long, because that is our style. And I think the shows on the radio were limited to like 27 minutes or thereabouts. So we kept doing that. We did it through 2014. And then, yeah, we started getting sponsors and supporters, which was amazing. And then I think what it was is that we would always get that question of like, what happens next? What are y'all going to do? Like, what's the long-term plan? And like, sort of our long-term plan was like, keep doing this show. But Bobby Warshaw was the one who pressed us on that. And both of us were just like, I don't know, do more shows, I guess. And so that was kind of, I guess, the starting point of like, all right, well, let's do some more shows. And I think what happened, Daryl and I were both heading into the office at the same time when Joe Lowry tweeted, like, I might start a podcast. And I think we were both like, arrived at the office with a like, Joe wants to do a podcast, we should reach out to Joe, because he's just you know, he's very, very good at what he does. And then if you meet Joe, if you interact with him, he makes me feel like a complete slob in the way I talk, by everything is very specific and there are no ums and ahs, and he doesn't get caught up in his words, and he is very deliberate, and I don't know how he does that, but he does it really well.
That's a really good Joe impersonation.
he's more wholesome than I am. I don't know how to do the wholesomeness in the voice. Somehow he sounds like an adult and I sound like I'm his age, but there you go. I think Allocation Disorder was when we became affiliated with The Athletic, and there were sort of plans there for them to do some different types of podcasts. And I guess we had some production expertise, so we were happy to help out with that. And that's kind of what it's been, because the podcast industry is still so new, and it's still a thing that, like, I think some people think is really easy to make money off of, and some people just want to do because it can be fun and is an enjoyable time. And trying to help people like get it going, because it's been really good for us. It's definitely a thing that we always kind of prioritized, and helping people however we could. I think also the more people know what podcasts are, the more like respectable of a job it is. So when I'm, you know, at family events and they're like, you do what now? You talk about, okay. Sure. Whatever. That's the end all be all, is just having my family members know what I do for a living. That is a fair,
you know, target and goal. To Thanksgiving dinner and be like, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm doing.
Yeah. To take it back to it. Like, so when Daryl did pass, it was, his mom came over, and it was sort of nice to see her experience it, because I think he didn't really talk about it. And I think his dad sort of like knew he talked about soccer, but that was it, same sort of thing. And so for her to come over and I think experience how much he meant to people here in Richmond, but then people wrote letters. They got, I think, hundreds of letters, like handwritten letters about what he had meant to them. And it was the recurring narrative was, I think, like, I've never met Daryl, but he feels like a very close friend. And that is, I think, like the highest praise you could give him, because I think that's what he wanted the show to always be, was reflective of, we want to be, you know, nice people who you would want to have a conversation with and not screaming into a mic about, I don't know, hot takes and whatnot. And so to bring it back to your question, that's been the biggest thing for me, I think, since he passed, was making sure that things continue to reflect the ideal that we had come up with together. And Daryl's definitely a bit more thorough and a bit less emotional. He ran a little bit less hot. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. So like for an example, like somebody messaged us a long time ago about like, oh, this thing hasn't happened with US soccer. Isn't that ridiculous? And I was all ready to be, you know, up in arms. And he was like, well, have you read about it? And it turned out that like it hadn't happened because they'd launched a different program and put more money into that program. It was just a different name. And so I think that was like, Daryl had that kind of like, let's make sure we know what we're doing. Let's research. Let's just not spout off the top of our heads. And that's been a big one that I've kind of tried to internalize since then. And I think that will be the kind of guiding idea behind the show to the extent it can be.
And to kind of reiterate a point that you said in there, and something that, you know, myself and I know my fellow co-hosts that I run the show with, listening to you and Daryl for years, you guys, you know, became legit, like you said, like a family. Like, it's odd talking to you now because I've had your voice in my headphones every single day for the past, you know, years and years now. So it's like, it's weird because it's like, I listen to you and Daryl say something and it's like, okay, like I'm listening to it. I have my own takes. I have my own opinions, but now it's like, I'm talking to you. So whatever.
Sorry, I'm cutting you off. We'll come back to it.
No, go for it.
Well, so I tweeted this like last week or 2 weeks ago, again, time meaningless, but yeah. I am still really like fascinated by that. Like only a couple weeks ago did it click for me that people do that. Cause I do that with other podcasts I listen to where I'm like, no, it's this movie. What are you talking about? Like, you're getting it wrong. Like, and it, in that moment it was like, oh God, people do that to me. So do you do that? Is that a thing that you've done to our show? I'm like, what do you guys? No, that's totally wrong. Oh no. Is there a thing that we consistently annoyed you with?
No, it's not annoying. It's just like, you know how, like, again, you hang out around friends and family, you know, quirks of friends and family that they may not recognize when they speak, or like certain things they start to like tend to like lean towards, right? Like if it's like something that's blue and yellow, they always lean towards blue and don't even recognize it. Like, it's just funny, like listening to it day after day, week after week, month after month. And it's like, you know, it's like, again, just becoming a family member or a friend. It's like, come on, Taylor, what are you talking about again? You know, like, it's that whole thing. And I'm sure I do it too.
But what is there a thing that you can think of either with me or Daryl where like, oh, like that is a little bit like you've already kind of established this feeling? I genuinely am curious because I think if you asked me and I were being honest, I would say like the reason why I always say I'm a Man United fan is because I feel like I have to own that to then talk about them. Because if people are new, they might think like, who's this guy? He definitely seems to have bias here. So anytime I can like acknowledge the bias, I will try to do that, but I know there's probably times that I don't and don't realize I have it. No, I think
that's completely fair. I don't, on the spot right now, no, because I wasn't expecting to talk about this, but that's on the spot, no. I don't have the feedback on the spot, but I mean, it's just
funny. I am okay with you not having criticism. We're good. That's fine.
No criticism. I love it. It's something that I think is missing when you look at like, and it's not any type of like hate on like ESPN, Fox Sports, any of that stuff. Those people have great jobs and they do it phenomenally, but it's something that all those companies miss is like the human effect, the human element. Like, let's connect as humans. These athletes they talk to on a weekly, daily basis are humans, podcasters, everyone doing it is a human. So everyone has their biases, everyone has their negatives, all that stuff. Like, let's just acknowledge it. Like, everyone, like, as long as you're a good person at the end of the day, like, let's just kind of roll with it and like laugh at the negatives. I don't know.
No, that's, I think that's the best. Like, and again, that's definitely Daryl's influence. I think he's a bit more just like, let's do good so everybody feels good than I am. I think I'm definitely a bit more like cynical in that regard, a thing that I've tried to change because cynicism isn't good for a baby child. But I'm with you that it's so easy to talk about players in the abstract. And like one of the crystallizing moments for me was like doing a top drawer soccer show with Travis. And I was talking about like a 17-year-old. I'm like, I just, you know, that left foot is just not good enough. And it's like, man, if I were 17 and I heard somebody just, I had no idea who they were, but they were just talking about why I'm not good enough. Like that would be a big bummer. And it is it's part of the job. It's part of the industry, but there are ways to do it. I think to your point that aren't just like, this guy sucks, but being like, well, I think he could develop there if he wants to kind of move to that next level. And I think that's a kinder, gentler way to phrase it, but I would prefer to be kinder and gentler than, I don't know, calling people names and then meeting those people for the first time and it being awkward.
No, 100%. Like a few weeks ago, I guess, geez, might be 2 months ago at this point, again, with your point in time, not existent. I interviewed a U.S. men's national team player. I'll keep it super generic just because I don't want to like blow his thing up, but talking about it, you know, potential move to Europe, eventually the move to Europe happened, right? Super nice dude, talked about, he was more focused on the mental side of the game during the conversation. I like that. I liked hearing about his mentality. If you want to take a guess, you can take a guess. I mean, I'll acknowledge it or not acknowledge it.
How long ago was this?
About, again, maybe time not great, 2-3 months ago.
And had he already moved?
Not at the point when I spoke with him.
All right. We can leave it there.
Okay. But I DM with him on Instagram on a regular basis. Very nice guy. Like, he wants to keep up with me. He asks me how I'm doing. Like, he remembers things. And I'm like, shit, you're a human being. Forget about that point, right? Like, you know, that like him and I had a great conversation on a podcast that led to a good conversation off the camera. And it's like, you know, we just talk regularly, ask him how things are doing. And he said that the move to Europe, especially at a young age, was one that I think right away he wasn't ready for, especially in the middle of COVID. And his conversations have led me of kind of like being more focused on like the player's mentality and where they're at mentally and kind of how that can impact their game. All the talent in the world, but the mentality is different. And, you know, I don't know where, how we got on this conversation. Wasn't expecting just, to get here just, in this conversation, but I love it. Humans,
man. Cause like, no, I think about that a lot. Like that's the type of question I would like to ask. Like, the one that sticks with me is I had to like cancel recording once because like my dog got sick, had to take the dog to like the emergency vet. And there's like a player has had to do that for sure, but a player can't just be like not showing up to the game today. So I'm sure there's a time when like a player had to put their dog down and then play that weekend, and maybe they just weren't quite as like electric and alive as they would be otherwise, but they're not going to talk about that. They're not going to be like vulnerable enough in front of a camera, because why would you be, to say like, oh yeah, my dog died, I was pretty sad, because they're going to get torn apart on any number of talking head shows. And so they're going to keep that to themselves. But to your point, like, that stuff happens and it's just so easy to forget. Angel Di Maria, like subbing out of a game because his house was broken into, like that's going to have an effect. That's going to have a huge impact. And I think it's just really easy to be like, ah, they're millionaires, they're fine. And it's like, yeah, they're millionaires with kids at home. I'm sure that wasn't fun to think about. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a really good way to kind of go about thinking about things. Yeah, and also you're like buddies with a player now. That's kind of cool.
I mean, that was honestly one of the best takeaways from that, is like, yeah, like, you know, I'm waiting for the full number so we could text, but it's cool now. But but no. So kind of taking that mentality again, that's kind of how I always like to try to talk about players now. You know, there's points where it's like there's a striker who hasn't scored in 5 games and I'm like, oh my God, this guy sucks. But no, of course, I try to balance myself out. The Olympic qualifying, U.S., we've played a game against Costa Rica and the Dominican Republic. Two very different looking teams, in my opinion. And, you know, this is my best attempt at a transition into this. The Costa Rica game, Costa Rica, in my opinion, I thought they were a much better showing than I expected. I know that they have a lot of super talented youngsters, but don't want to get super heavy into the Costa Rica side of things. But the mentality for that game was almost like bend, don't break, right? So I guess we can start there. What did you kind of see from the U.S. in that first Costa Rica Olympic qualifier?
I think in both games, genuinely in the first half, especially against Dominican Republic and then against the entirety of Costa Rica, I saw nerves and I saw the reason why Olympic qualifying and like qualifying for youth tournaments is important, because these guys are aware that something is on the line. And if they don't make it, they're not going to go. This is the first men's qualification we've had since CUVA, correct? Since we failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. So to me, there's an awareness that like other guys have failed. We can't afford to fail. And I think you can see a little bit of that hesitancy, a little bit of that nervousness in the way they approached certainly the first half against the Dominican Republic, but I would say also aspects of Costa Rica as well. I think there are obvious lineup questions that have been asked by people smarter than myself. And I think those are fair questions to ask about the creativity in the team and how you kind of solve some problems against more challenging or more defensive teams. And I think we're still going to find out how we deal with that against Mexico on Thursday night and then to the knockout rounds. But I think overall, it's a team that has seemed a little bit nervous, but also very capable. And I think that's impressive given everything we've talked about, from COVID to roster changes to not having some of the players that could be there be there. I think overall, it's been an impressive start, in my opinion.
No, I agree with that. And I think especially the Costa Rica game, it was a lot of nerves, a lot of lack of match fitness as well. Mm-hmm. Plus on top of that, I think the players on the field, those question marks around crisis decisions were a little, I was on that board of like, where's the creativity? Georgi Mihailovic was the only really creative factor to me that kind of had that ability, right? But at the end of the day, Jesus Ferrara continued to score. But then against going to the Dominican Republic, Ferrara did not look good, sub on Soto. And Mihailovic late, Dotson late. Like, it's a lot of, I guess what I get worried as a U.S. men's national team fan when I'm watching the full team or I'm watching this team, it's like, do we rely upon like these special moments so much, or is it like there's actually like a style behind the play, right? Like, we struggled mm-hmm. against the Dominican Republic, who we should be pretty much beating up on whenever we play them at the U23 level, the senior men's team level, whatever it may be. Like, did we have to rely upon Hassani Dotson just as an immediate spark plug, Jermaine Jones-esque, right, mm-hmm. to come on and be that, I guess, changing force? I don't know. Like, did you see anything that you felt was like tactically, and I always, this is something that I praise from you, is like the tactical mindset I don't have, and I try to do my best to have it, but I don't. Did you see anything tactically in the first half that, against the Dominican Republic, that they were trying to do that maybe Dotson coming on or Mihailovic coming on, like, just was able to kind of offer a little bit more?
Yeah. So Joe and I talked about this a little bit today, but I don't mind summarizing that and stealing some of his points. I think what we saw from the U.S. in the first half was like Jackson Ewell, if he was on the left side of that central midfield, when the U.S. Mm-hmm. was in possession, he would go very far wide, and that left the left back would push further up the field. Yeah. When it was on the right-hand side, Johnny Cardoso would do the same thing. And I think all of that was designed to break down a Dominican team that they thought was going to be in a 4-4-2. I think they thought it was going to be a very tight, very narrow 4-4-2. And so the objective, I think, was to have numbers wide, have the ball there, create overloads, and either get down that channel or pull players out and then open up space in the middle. Dominican Republic came out in a back three / back five. And I think that sort of completely nullified the overall game plan, because what they were doing was vacating space in the middle of the U.S. to have those numbers wide. But then all the Dominican Republic needed to do was put one player there, and you've kind of blocked that off. Yeah. And so that's why I think there kept being that slow cycle of possession without much creativity. And then the second half, they kept their midfield central. They kept those three central. They let the fullbacks just patrol up and down. And I think they were just much more aggressive and much more willing to take chances. Again, I think they didn't want to get caught in transition. They knew that was where they were most vulnerable and where the Dominican Republic would try to attack. Sometimes you can be a little bit too concerned about that counter. And I think that they changed it up, put numbers in better positions, and then backed the individuals. And that's positive and negative to your point, that if you have a team where everybody kind of knows the system and is interchanging and moving and overlapping, you create opportunities. The system is the creator at that point. But mm-hmm. when you rely on the individual, and I think that's a thing that's happened with Andy Herzog's teams in the past and with other youth teams with the U.S., you're sort of relying on pace and skill down the wings and less so sustained build up through the middle. And I think we saw some of that against Costa Rica. I think we saw some of that against the Dominican Republic, but we also saw like 20 pass sequences that led to goals. And that's not a thing I would have expected from the first half. So I think we saw them put players where they needed to be, play smart soccer, kind of believe in themselves to get something going. And when they did, to continue it. And here we are, a 4-0 win. I'll take that.
You know, exactly. 100, I'll take the end result at the end of the day, right? So, I mean, that I'm happy about. And the point of the wings is something that's very, very interesting to me, because like we're getting way more production out of the fullbacks than we are the wingers. None of the wingers have really kind of stood out to me as like, I definitely want to pencil them in at the left and right wings, right? Like they've all done fine. But Sam Vines, Julian Araujo, Aaron Herrera, they've just been way more impressive to me getting up and down the field, right? But then, you know, leaving the door open to a counterattack as well to that point. So
yeah,
I guess what I'm thinking is, you know, we already locked ourselves up for a semifinal spot, right? The most important game of this entire qualifying isn't against Mexico. And that's where I feel like there's a lot of conversation right now is the game against Mexico. How are you feeling about that? It's not a game that, I guess it means something of if we're going to play Honduras or if we're going to play Canada, but is it something that we should be throwing Justin Glad out there, who's on a yellow, but he's been our best center back, something that we should throw Jesus Ferrara out there, who's had, you know, a good performance, a poor performance. He's sitting on a yellow as well. Kind of how are you feeling about the Mexico game leading into the semifinal?
I don't think this is a cop-out answer, but my genuine answer is I feel like whatever Jason Kreis wants to do to best prepare the team for that knockout round game, that's what I want to happen. Mm-hmm. So if that is, we want Justin Glad there, we want Jackson Ewell and Perea there to sort of get more familiar with the system, get more familiar with what we're asking of them, great. If they're not there because he wants to rest them and make sure you don't have the yellow card accumulation threat, that is also fine with me. It's a very strange time to play Mexico in a tournament and sort of not care about the result, but it is the case that if we lose 5-0 to Mexico but then win that semifinal and we go to the Olympics, like I don't care that we lost to Mexico. That's kind of all that matters. Yeah, and vice versa, if we win 5-0 but don't go, it's like a moral victory for sure, but they're potentially earning Olympic gold again and we are potentially sitting at home again. So whatever allows like the U.S. to play the best soccer they can in the knockout rounds, that's what I am there for. And also, like, some of the things I thought wouldn't work have worked. I really didn't think Sebastian Soto coming in for Jesus Ferreira at halftime was a good idea. And I think the way Soto dropped in and linked up play and worked really hard off the ball in a way that I think he didn't against Costa Rica or wasn't able to, like, he looked really good to me. So I won't mind if he starts and Ferreira gets a break. I wouldn't mind if Ferreira plays somebody somewhere else just to see what he can do. So I think I'm okay with experimentation from the U.S. and resting some people. I wouldn't mind seeing David Ochoa come back in and get minutes against a team that are probably going to get some shots off if they go with Marcinkowski for the same reason. Yeah, that's fine too. I do have questions about Mexico because they've played, I think, 10 of 11 of the same players from one game to the next. So also, will they rotate? And if they do, are they considerably weaker or are they still pretty good? Because my guess is that they're still pretty good, even if it's their B team from this B team.
I think they're still pretty good. I mean, you know, this is a very good young group from Mexico, and which sucks because, right, like, you know, we don't like Mexico, you know, but it's at the end of the day, I think it'll be a good game, kind of whoever goes out there. You know, it's like you want to beat Mexico, but again, we don't want to sit home for the dance. It is what it is. Who has impressed you the most from this Olympic qualifying group? Me personally, Justin Glad is a guy who I've been hot and cold on his entire career. He's the most experienced veteran in this young group, right? He has over 100 and I think 20 games played for RSL at this point. I know one of my co-hosts, Sam, huge Justin Glad fan, right? He's like, Justin Glad, like, how is he only 20, whatever years old, 21 years old, right? I like performances, but then I think we just get such shaky performances from him on the national team level. And I've seen it at RSL as well. But he's been an absolute rock for us with a group where we only have three center backs, right? So Justin Glad is a guy who I'm loving watching these past two games. I guess who really impressed you?
I've liked Justin Glad a lot. The times that I've seen him look very, very good in possession, both for various US teams and then also at club level, like, yeah, I've been into it. I've been like, yeah, this guy's great. But then he does have those inconsistent moments. There was one, I forget who it was against last season, where it was just like he just completely gave the ball away. And it was like, that's not great.
That's not great.
I don't want to do that because, yeah, I mean, obviously that's not a thing you can afford to do as much at senior national team level. Glad aside, I thought David Ochoa, I will never know which one it is, really, really did an amazing job against Costa Rica, because in the same way that if Jesus Ferreira scores in those opening minutes, it's a completely different game. if the U.S. concedes off of a like, I think it's one of the center backs getting robbed in possession. It happened a couple of different times in that one. But then, like, if they concede from that, suddenly I think there's even more doubt with those center backs. I think there's more hesitation to play on the ball. It's probably you end up just going long. And so I think some of those saves he made were just fundamental to the U.S. being able to play the game they wanted to and being calm. I think Sam Vines has been really, really important to that as well. That's a player who I was already like pretty hyped about, but then watching him for this team and how good he has been, continued to be on the attacking front, but still getting back, overloaded a little bit, I guess, against Costa Rica, but I wouldn't put that entirely on him because when you're trying to mark two people at once, that's always a bit of a challenge. So I thought he was really good. And then probably Hassani Dotson as well. That was one who Joe and I disagreed about on the Costa Rica game, that I thought he was good, but I thought his positioning was a little bit suspect at times. Joe had much more positive things to say. And then after his brace against the Dominican Republic, I'm definitely on Team Dotson on that one. Because both goals, it's really, really, really good first touches, but also both of them setting him up to hit the ball exactly how he needed to. The first one pops it up a little bit so he can take it on the volley. The second one, it's like opening up his hips so then he can go around the defender, but then get with the second touch, I think it was still a great shot into the side netting, and both of the finishes great as well. So not just because he scores goals, he's been very good for the U.S., especially against the Dominican Republic, but those are probably the three that have most stood out to me.
Okay. And I mean, like, I think that's completely fair, right? Like, I am maybe the conductor of the Sebastian Soto train. I love him. But yeah. I mean, clearly, Dotson, Vines, Glad, Ochoa, like, those are the guys who have really, I guess, upped their potential for Greg Berhalter's squad as well. Yeah. Because, you know, this is also a big showing for that as well. And I think Berhalter's definitely paying attention, or he should be paying attention.
Hopefully. He should be. I'm guessing. I think, yeah, and in that regard, I think it's probably Sam Vines is the one who has the most to gain, because the left back spot just remains a question mark for the senior team. And there's like three possibilities, but there are reasons to not love those three, including Serginho Dest over there, because would we rather have him on the right? Who knows? So I think Sam Vines, if he keeps playing really, really well, gives Greg Berhalter more reason to call him in. So yeah, I think Soto, like, not to say that he's been bad, I don't think he has been, I just think he's different than what Jesus Ferreira brings, obviously, and I really like Jesus Ferreira. But I was excited to see Soto included. I was excited to see him brought back to Norwich, and really the work effort from him in that second half last night, and just the on the ball and off the ball hustle, I thought also made a big difference. So I think your hype for Sebastian Soto is justified and fair.
I just love it. I love it. And it's a tough striker pool. So I'm going to not make you choose a striker. I think that's completely unfair. I think there's many a pick that you can have without this striker pool, but we've all seen the graphics on Twitter and on Instagram and all over talking about the MLS guys, the European guys, the guys making the move from MLS to Europe. If you had to, I guess, pinpoint a few strikers that you feel like you would like to have in a 23-man roster, let's say two or three guys, right? Who is leading the pack for you right now? Are you still a Josie's our best striker in the pool guy? Are you a Josh Sargent all the way? Like, I guess I want to hear more about your take on the striker pool.
Yeah. I don't know if I have like an out and out first choice for me, but I think the first name that I would probably put on there with confidence is Josh Sargent. I think that's not, definitely wasn't the case earlier in the season. Yeah. And I think some of that is the kind of situation that Josie Altidor had at Sunderland, where he's not getting great service. He's not being put in consistent attacking opportunities, so then he takes those chances more regularly and gets more confident and then scores goals. But he is scoring goals now, and I think also from what we've learned about Berhalter with his pursuit of Yunus Musa, with his pursuit of Serginho Dest, is that he is in touch with these guys and he is sending them clips, and there are conversations about what they need to do and how they could have done this and how that fits in with what the U.S. is doing. And I have to believe that he's having those conversations with Josh Sargent. And my hope would be that when we see him in camp, when we see him, I would guess against Jamaica, he starts to see if he does more of what Berhalter wants from that number nine of sometimes dropping and sometimes stretching the line and sometimes overloading one side. If he has that mobility and is moving around as opposed to being a little bit more static, that's a thing I would very much like to see. If he's being static deliberately because he has people running off of him and people running around him, also fine with me. But I think to see how his game has progressed with the national team because of how it's progressed at club level, I think Josh Sargent is definitely on that list. I think I'm still on the, like, Josie Altidor is up there conversation, but I will admit that, like, it's been so long since we've seen him at this point. And there's always the injury concerns and how's he coming back and how's he going to start the season. So I think I would like to see Jozy in there. I don't want, like, I feel bad that Clint Dempsey's last game for the national team was the failure to qualify. And I would like Jozy Altidore to get another game and just sort of remind us that he is a good goal scorer. Even if he's not going to go to the World Cup, I still think maybe give him a couple more games just to, I don't know. It's unfair to me that he was one of the ones who was kind of blamed for it. Same as it was, in my opinion, unfair that it was Michael Bradley who got blamed for it. It seemed like they're the two, despite other people having already been brought back into this national team who played that night. It seems like those two get the most stick. And I would like to see Jozy Altidore on that list. Aside from that, like, it is really wide open that there are lots of young players at various levels in various leagues scoring goals, doing things that seem reminiscent of what Berhalter wants them to do. So that's a tough one. Like, I think right now, I wouldn't have said this maybe even a month ago, but like Daryl Dike is doing things, man. And it's not just scoring ridiculous goals. It's fighting for everything. He feels like a player that could be put in if the U.S. are chasing and they need someone to fight for crosses, to fight for 50-50s and just be in there to be a presence. But his technique has improved and his touch has gotten better. And I remember watching him for UVA and it was not close to what it is now, and it's definitely improved from when he was with Orlando. So that's another one who I think he doesn't quite fit what Berhalter wants from that role, but I would still like to see him called in to see what he does do in that situation and how he progresses from there.
You mean you weren't watching DK at UVA saying this guy's playing for Barnsley in the next year and a half?
I mean, maybe, but that wasn't a positive. that was like, I have one friend here in Richmond who's from there, who is a Barnsley supporter, and it's just always like sad noises when I ask how things are with Barnsley. I was like, it's terrible. It's terrible. So that was kind of how I came to equate Barnsley with soccer. And then I think that's the one that Breck Shea flipped off as well. Yes. So between those two, like, if you told me that, I would probably, if anything, have been like, that's not good for him. Instead, they're chasing the promotion spots and he looks really, really good. Sure. Great. Well done, Daryl Dike.
No, exactly. And where does Breck Shea fit? No, I'm just kidding. good old Breck Shea. Love him.
Good old Breck Shea.
I'm of your take as well. Like, I want to see Jozy score again in a meaningful game. I would love to see him get a World Cup goal. Just kind of give him that big miss he just hasn't had in his career, right? I got a lot of shit on Twitter, on the internet, shockingly, I got shit on Twitter a few months ago about me saying that Jozy Altidore is a guy I would love to see at the World Cup coming off the bench as like a super sub role, because I think you could get a solid 15-20 minutes out of him at this point, obviously, right? World Cup's still another year away. We'll figure things out then. But people were saying, you know, I'm MLS biased, that, you know, Josie's done all this stuff. I just feel like there's some needed.
No bias revealed there at all, by the way, from the people who were writing that criticism. Sure.
No, exactly.
Just
right?
You.
No,
bias.
Wasn't the flip side, too. But do you take that? I guess this may be a larger question picture, but I'm a person who believes in having people who've been at the World Cup before on the roster to kind of just say this is how things are done. If you exclude Jozy Altidore, the only person in a potential 23 that I can think of is John Brooks. And obviously John Brooks, veteran, you know, a guy who's probably still our best defender. John Brooks is it if you I take out Jozy Altidore. So I want Jozy there just as a guy who's like, I've been here before. I've been in a World Cup. I've played with Dempsey and Donovan. Like, I've been with these guys. I'm a legend of U.S. soccer. Like, follow me, follow John. Like, let's go show you how to do this thing.
I mean, I feel like you're counting out DeMarcus Beasley, and he can never be counted out. Beasley aside, and I guess Aaron Johansson maybe could make a resurgence, but I don't think he played in 2014. I think he was there, but didn't play. Maybe he got a minute or two. Let's get Mix in there. That's the difference there. I think so. It's like, and to the point about Olympic qualifying, that I think they handled that well, admittedly against the Dominican Republic, against, I don't know, Serbia. Like, if Serbia are doing something different than you expected them to do, and that was routinely the case, say, with when Bob Bradley was in charge, it required changes at halftime and adjustments. And I think, to have a veteran who's been there and been like, it's fine, we can fight through this, we can find a way back. I think, like, to extend it further, that's why a part of why Bayern have the success they do is because everybody who plays for Bayern Munich has won the Bundesliga or won some silverware or maybe won the Champions League. And if you always, I mean, they have a term that means like Bayern luck. because somehow they always find a way to win. Forget what the term is, and I wouldn't be able to say it anyway because I don't speak German. But like, yeah, there becomes an idea of like, nah, we're going to win. Don't worry about it. We'll find a way through. Like, of course we can do this. Whereas if you lose every game when you're up or you don't find a way to kind of get a result in the second half, then that becomes your norm. And so, yeah, I think having a player who's been there, who can pick people up, and even if they haven't, you know, been there four times and scored a bunch of goals at the World Cup, like still just the presence of mind and the experience is, yeah, I think it's really, really valuable. I think to the people who say he's done, like, honestly, like maybe he is, but I haven't seen him in a while. And I would guess that the people who are saying he is done definitely haven't seen him in a while. And I think Toronto, in my mind, aren't really appointment viewing. I'm not trying to be disparaging, but there are other MLS teams who, when they're playing other MLS teams, I'm going to be like, I want to see that game. I want to tune in. I feel like a couple times last season, I went to watch Toronto and Josie was hurt. And that's like, if I'm tuning in to watch Josie play, it's like when I used to watch Frankfurt just to see Timmy Chandler play. And then if he gets hurt or he's not playing, I'm not going to watch Frankfurt anymore. And I bet there are a fair few people who haven't seen him play at club level. Just remember Kuba, just remember how bad that was, and then kind of go with the stereotypes of like injury prone. Is he that good? Is his touch good? Does he finish enough? And it just sort of becomes, not to say that the people who are criticizing him are lazy, but I think there's some people certainly are. And I think it's easy to say, oh, he's past it, he sucks, than to say like, well, here's why I think he might offer value, or here's the thing he does that other people can't do. And until other people can, he's the guy who's going to do it. I think it's hard sometimes to do that because it feels like I'm going to get a lot of stick for this one. And maybe Josie Altidore's past it. But I think, yeah, fundamentally, if you're just saying what is your honest truth, like that's all that matters, because you're not playing a role. You're not saying a thing to say a thing or having a take. You're just saying what your honest appraisal of the situation is.
Exactly. I mean, that was my whole point of like, no one's clear front running, like taking away the title of number nine from Josie. So Josie has it until... I mean, my only other person that I've said could potentially have it is Giassi Zardes. Just mainly because Zardes just seems to score, whether if it's off his face, his foot, whatever it may be, the ball goes in the back of the net when he plays. That was my only other person I gave an argument for.
He does what Greg Berhalter asks. Like it's easy to not love Giassi Zardes. It's easy to not love Christian Roldan. I don't always love when he's in squads because I feel like there are other better players. But there's the balance of, do those other better players like have the familiarity with the system? Do they understand what Berhalter wants? Does he get along with them well? I think that's what Giassi Zardes is. He comes in and does exactly what Berhalter wants, even if it's not glamorous or pretty. I think if you're a coach, you can't ask for much more than that. Yeah, he's definitely still in that conversation too. That's a good shout.
Okay. Well, Taylor, I didn't expect this conversation to go as long as it did, but I'm very, very happy about it. It was very Total Soccer Show-esque, and I'm very happy about that.
Rambling it all over the place?
It's okay. It's what I wanted out of the conversation. No, it was absolutely fantastic. I'm going to have you on again to talk more about the women's national team and stuff like that when we get a little bit later on down the line. I wanted to touch on that today, but we ran long. It's okay. We talked about the games that just happened, and I'm okay with that.
Henry Macario is also good. That's on a course. We'll see how that goes. We can talk about that next time.
I like that. All right. Taylor, thank you for coming on, for joining me, for making your debut on the MLS Aces podcast. I greatly, greatly appreciate it, and we'll have to have you back on soon.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.